It's our pleasure to welcome to the show filmmaker Denise Zemekhal, as directed a film entitled Skin of Glass, which will be debuting next Thursday the 19th at 7 p.m. at the Rialto Cinemas in my hometown of El Cerrito. Although it's called the Albany Film Fest, Albany is right next to it. In fact, it's a little bit funny because El Cerrito means the little hill, but the little hill is actually in Albany. We're all friends. Denise, welcome to the show. Skin of Glass, tell us a little bit more about the film, please.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Well, this film that took maybe, 6 years to be made. And it all started when I found out that my father's masterpiece, this beautiful all-glass office tower, a modernist building he designed in the 60s, was occupied by homeless people in São Paulo, in downtown São Paulo in Brazil. So I took the journey back to Brazil to find out what was going on and try to get inside the building and reconnect with my father, who I lost when I was 14, but also to meet the people who are living inside this building, who made this building their home, and get to know them and talk to them. And that's how it started in 2017.
It's an amazing city, too, Sao Paulo, because, I mean, it has a skyline not unlike maybe Manhattan. The amount of skyscrapers, it's really amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like a concrete jungle, we say in Brazil. It has like a like also, you know, you also say it's like an ocean of buildings, and it's, in a way, it's a much bigger city in terms of space. So there are many more buildings than in Manhattan. So in downtown, when you look at the skyline, it's just like endless buildings, you know, it's amazing.
So how did it come to be that this skyscraper became like a barrio in the sky? What happened?
Well, the building was, my father was commissioned to design this building in the 60s by one of the richest men in São Paulo, in Brazil, who had a glass company and other companies as well. So that was like 3 years before we had a military coup in Brazil. So this man, he used to also provide materials to the construction of Brasilia, which was the new capital in Brazil. Mm-hmm. That was dreamed and built by a more progressive president at the time. So when the coup happened, they boycotted all his business, and he lost a lot of money, and he couldn't pay for the loan he had from my state bank. So what happens is that the building went to the federal banks that had, commission, who had paid for the building, gave him the loan. So after that, the building had a lot of other tenants, like, you know, the Social Security from Brazil, and also was the headquarters of the federal police during the dictatorship, which was kind of when I realized, you know, the building was telling the story of Brazil, you know, because it was reflecting all that was going on outside. The building was happening inside the building in terms like, you know, we had the golden age of architecture, so that building was conceived at that time. And then we had the coup, and then we had the federal police, you know, staying in the building for at least 20 years during the dictatorship. So after they left, the federal police left the building. It was abandoned for like 9 years. Mm. And there is in our constitution in Brazil, we have the right to home, to housing. And also there's another thing that's very important. There's something like there's no buildings or house that can be empty for a long time because they lose their social function. So in a way, you know, people started to occupy abandoned properties in Brazil in the mid-90s, I guess. So that's how, you know, they ended up, you know, making that building their home.
You know, I remember when recently, the World Cup and the Olympics were in Brazil, and there were a lot of protests with people saying, look, we shouldn't be spending all these millions and millions of dollars, euros, whatever, on Olympics and the World Cup when we have so many problems here with housing and such. And that is a huge thing. I mean, I'm in San Francisco, which has a very severe problem with unhoused people. So what is the when you get to a place like Sao Paulo? As I said, most of the time when you see skyscrapers, you just think of business people in there. But how is that in Sao Paulo with the homeless population?
So we have, in a way, it's interesting because we do have a lot of people leaving the streets, maybe considering the size of the city, which is like 13 million people. It's not as big maybe in proportion as here. But also the culture is a little different. You know, people tend to bring their family, together and find a way for them to live in the same house, even if there's like 10 people living in a small place. There are the favelas, so it's a little different in that sense, but it's still, we are having a housing crisis because as we have an interview in this film from the Secretary of Housing saying, you take like 100 years to be able to give everyone who is in this list, which is like 500,000 families, just in the city of São Paulo, to get a house. So, sometimes people have a place, but is in a place that there is contamination in the soil. So it's not only homelessness, but there is also the lack of a just and safe place to live.
So we talked about this building, the Palais de Vidro, the skin of glass that your father designed, and you tragically lost him way too early. What is it like when you think about the relationship you had with your father and then you're walking through something that he created, and what were you thinking about? What were you feeling during those times?
Yeah, that was kind of first was like, this curiosity, a little unconscious, like, oh, I'm going inside this building and I'm going to find my father inside the building. I'm going to see something he made and that might be, and remind me of the house he made for us, or I don't know, I was just really craving to connect with him. And so what happened is that when I got there, they didn't let me in for a long time. I was negotiating with the leaders of the occupation to, find a way to film inside the building. And they kept saying, no, the residents don't want you to film. And it took many, many months. And then I decided to come back home, California, which I live in Berkeley, and wait and go back again. But then I don't want to give any spoilers, but there's something very dramatic that happens in the middle of my filming. And then everything changed. And for a moment, I thought I didn't have a film anymore or I couldn't finish this film. But then somehow, some other doors open, and I'll let people, find out about this story when they watch the film. So I think it's, we shouldn't tell you everything that happens in the story, because it's a very, the story has a very dramatic turning point.
So just for my own, because I live in El Cerrito, and I think about, because people think Brazilian food, they think fogo de chão, and I think, well, that's brilliant, but that's very, very expensive. What about like Casa do Pastico, Bossa Nova, some of the other places? Where, if you want traditional Brazilian food in Berkeley and you don't want to spend $200, where do you go?
Oh, right. Yeah, there's a bistro, I guess, in São Paulo. I think in El Cerrito. And also I go to Bossa Nova a lot to get my, some ingredients to some things I like to do from Brazil, so like the passion fruit mousse that my friends love it. I have to take that to every party I go, every dinner party. So, yeah, that's the two that comes to mind. There's also one in Oakland called, I forgot the name. There's one in Oakland as well. I think it's Paulista. Yeah, but I wish there were more. Brazilian food is so good.
All right, so finally, this movie, you started in 2017. I guess you wrapped it up a couple of years ago, and here now finally we're getting the debut. And by the way, once again, everyone can check it out Thursday the 17th at 7 p.m. at the Rialto Cinemas. You can take actually BART to the plaza and just walk. It's just a couple blocks, and they have great real food there at the Cerrito Theater as well. But what's it like to sit on a film so long and to be patient for it to come out?
Well, in truth, the film has been released, and this is like the third year that we are showing this film.
Uh-huh.
It's amazing. We went all over the globe. You know, we went to Europe. The film went to China, Brazil. We had a premiere at Mill Valley Film Festival in 2023. But the film is really, you know, it's not because I made it, but it's very powerful. It has a lot of layers. So it is a very unique story in a sense that, you know, the more you watch the film, more you see different things. So it has been connecting with the audience very beautifully for all these years. So the film keeps being invited to be screened in many different places and festivals and universities and art houses. You know, we had a lot of art houses showing the film in Europe. So I'm really happy that, you know, it really connects with the audience. So we keep, you know, we keep this journey, which usually, you know, a film is shown like for a year maybe in film festivals, and this is like starting like the third year that we're showing it. So it's pretty amazing, and I'm really happy and proud of this film. I invite everyone to come, and please come.
Yes, everyone go. Skin of Glass, Albany Film Festival, Denise Zemeckhall. Congratulations on the film. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.